In this episode of Startups for the Rest of Us, Mike and I discuss the 10 elements of highly effective SaaS landing pages. This is Startups for the Rest of Us, episode 256. Welcome to Startups for the Rest of Us, the podcast that helps developers, designers, and entrepreneurs be awesome at launching software products, whether you've built your first product or you're just thinking about it. I'm Rob.
And I'm Mike.
And we're here to share our experiences to help you avoid the same mistakes we've made. So where this week, sir?
Well, I caught a nasty virus over the weekend, so I was hugging the toilet the other day. Just could not keep food down. So it's, Wednesday now, and I'm just kind of getting back into the swing of things and trying to catch up from having not gotten anything done the past several days. But it was pretty brutal.
Do you get sick a lot?
No, I almost never get sick. Like, I'll get sick like once every couple of years, and that's about it. But when it comes, it's just brutal. You know, I'll be in bed for like a couple of days just because I just can't get out of bed. Like, I remember making fun of you a little bit because, like, you said that you were sick once and you were so sick you couldn't even listen to podcasts.
Yeah.
I was that sick.
Yeah, that
And
sucks.
I remember laying in bed thinking that I was like, oh, I shouldn't have made fun of him.
I totally know what Rob's talking about right now. That is funny. So we've gotten a lot of comments on last week's episode, episode 255, where you talked about moving on from AutoShark and that whole decision. You've received tweets, you've received DMs, we've received several emails. There's more than a dozen comments on the podcast blog with folks just talking about how they thought this was one of our best episodes and basically wishing you luck and appreciating that you put yourself out there with the vulnerability and were willing to discuss this. And I think it really hits home with people to see it's not only vulnerability, that's a big part of it, but it's also just to see you, anyone, come out and talk about mistakes that they've made and to basically help show other folks how not to make those mistakes. I mean, I think that was really the point of last week, was to kind of bring it all to the front. So A, you could kind of have a postmortem, but then the entire listener base for this podcast could kind of peer into it and think to themselves, wow, am I doing that right now? You know, or am I going to do that with my next product? And really take it as a lesson for the community rather than a single person hiding away in a basement making these mistakes and no one learning from it. How have you felt about the response?
I mean, it's been overwhelmingly positive. I haven't really seen anything negative about it. I mean, there's a lot of thanks and appreciation, and I don't know. I guess it's humbling. It's more than I could have expected or hoped for, I guess. I don't know. It was one of those episodes where, like, it was coming, and I knew it was coming for a while, and it was kind of dreading it at the same time. So.
Yep. Very cool. So let's move on to what we're talking about this week. We received an email from Stefan at vividwebcopy.com. He says, hi, Rob and Mike. How about an episode about SaaS landing page design? And Stefan's actually looks like he's a copywriter, vividwebcopy.com, if you want to go check his stuff out. But Mike and I have a lot of thoughts on this topic, and so we wanted to weigh in. And I specifically put together this list. I was trying to boil it down into like the most effective elements that I see that go into these landing pages that work. And I want to talk about the typical SaaS landing page rather than going outside the box. Obviously, if you know the rules and you've been doing this and you're an expert UX guy or UI woman, you can break the rules, right? You don't need to listen to something like this. But if you're wondering about the most common and the most effective things in general that are working for SaaS landing pages, that's what we're going to talk about. And this is typically a SaaS homepage, although it can be often you copy your homepage to make landing pages for, say, Facebook ads and other stuff, because your homepage really should be that landing page that gets someone acquainted with your product quickly. So we're not going to talk about long form landing pages, even though like getdrip.com right now is a long form sales letter in essence. We're not talking about that because we're going to talk about the more traditional SaaS landing pages. And you can see examples of these at places like bidsketch.com, planscope.io, getambassador.com, hittail.com. All of those are the more traditional scene that we're going to talk about. So to dive in, the first element of highly effective SaaS landing pages are to design it for first-time visitors, to get in the mindset that you really want a first-time visitor to come, get acquainted, and go down a very specific path that you're outlining for them. If you have customers who are coming to your homepage to log in, they will find the login box. Don't make that prominent. Don't put that right smack in the best part of the screen, right above the fold. This is for first-time visitors. You're trying to educate them, get their interest piqued, have them figure out if it's for for them and then get them to take the next step in the action. So oftentimes I will see a login or a sign in button right in the same top navigation that you're trying to sell to people. And I disagree with that approach. I think it should be a tiny link above or maybe far off to the right. Like there should be a separation because your customers are going to find a way to log in. Don't worry about that. But your goal is really to get those first time visitors to follow this path that you have in mind.
Yeah, and the essence behind that is just to not give them false paths that they're going to go down and waste time. Because it's very easy to, and I've done this myself, I've go to a web page and you land on it and then there's a login button. You're like, oh, well, I kind of want to see the pricing and see what that stuff's like. And maybe it's not obvious where to see some of that stuff. So you click login and then it's just giving you a username and password fields to have you log in. And there's nothing else. There's nowhere else for you to go on that page. So then you end up going back and you get a little bit confused about where to go. So the whole idea of this is to make sure that when somebody's coming to your page and they don't know anything about your site or your application, that you're essentially walking them through everything. So that's why Rob's talking about designing it for the first-time visitor. You have to make a blanket assumption that the person coming to your site knows absolutely nothing. So because you're designing these pages for the first-time visitor, you have to figure out what the goal of that page is. What is it that you want them to do? Why should they care about your product? And what are the next steps that you want them to take? Do you want to ask them for a trial? Do you want to get them to get into your pipeline there? Do you want them to come back to your website in the future? Rob, you had a great talk a few years ago at the Business Software, which was, I forget the exact title, but it was something along the lines of the purpose of your website is not to get them to buy your app. It's to get them to come back to your website.
Right. Yeah. It was called the number one goal of your website. And it just talked about how returning visitors are between 6 and 20 times more likely to purchase from you. I mean, very few people purchase on the first try. There are exceptions to that. If you have a price point, I'd say starting between maybe $10 a month, we're talking SaaS here, right? So, but anywhere under, let's say $15-$20 a month, and you have a high curiosity factor where you kind of are giving someone something that they kind of are curious about trying. So an example of this could be like Hittail, right? Hittail has this promise of, we're going to give you keywords that you've never seen before. There's just a high curiosity of like, wow, what are my keywords going to be? And I can get them right away. So you're very likely to be able to get people to sign up directly for a trial and not actually need to go through an educational process first. It's a low commitment thing. Most apps are not like that, I'll say. I mean, if you have a proposal app or email marketing app or affiliate software, that kind of stuff is less about curiosity and it's more about, wow, does this fit me? Why is this better than other things, you know, that I've seen? And getting them to sign up for a trial right away is just a lot lower. There are lower odds to doing that. And that's where you need to start thinking about, okay, I shouldn't push this trial right away, but how can I start educating and how can I bring them back to my site in the future? And bringing them back, of course, these days, retargeting is a big one. And then getting folks on your email list. These are the two biggest drivers of being able to start to build a relationship and bring people back. So you can, instead of having a few people sign up, you get that 6 to 20 times higher likelihood of folks signing up. The second element of highly effective SaaS landing pages is to have a gripping headline. And I have a pretty simple formula for this that I've talked about in the past, but it's to just have three things in place. The first is to make a promise in the headline. The second thing is to have an action word, like a verb. And the third one is to either have a directly stated you or to imply you, meaning that you're talking to the person who's reading the headline. So as an example, I'll come back to Hittail again because it fits this well. The headline at Hittail.com is guaranteed to increase your organic traffic. And the promise is that it's guaranteed to increase traffic. The action, the verb, you know, is increase. And then there's a you, right? It's your. You rarely should be talking about your app. Here's another headline for Hittail that wouldn't work nearly as well. The best long-tail SEO keyword tool. Because there's no promise, there's no action, and there's no you. So I'm not saying this is a hard and fast rule that all headlines need to follow, but I've found it's a really good starting point for me. When I sit down to write a brand new headline, I say, what can I write first that follows these three rules? And then I start massaging and thinking of other headline ideas. So I think it's a good, solid framework to begin with.
Yeah, I mean, when you're coming up with the headlines, it's definitely all about the person who's visiting the site. And again, it goes back to who's coming there and what are they coming in for. But when they're looking at the page, they're going to be thinking, what's in it for me? And the simple formula really gives them a good idea of what's in it for them. You've got that promise, the action, and you're talking specifically about them. You don't want to be talking about your app or the things that it does or how it works or anything like that. You want to be telling them how it's going to benefit them.
If you want more info on headline writing, you can head over to copyhackers.com, and they have 7 different ebooks, and book 2 is $19, and it's called Headlines, Subheads, and Value Propositions. And that's definitely a decent place to start. There's a lot of info on headlines, but that's nice because it's specifically for software and startups. Third element of effective SaaS landing pages are to have at least one visual element here at the top of the page. So as Mike and I walk through this list, I want you to imagine it as going from top to bottom. It really is a prescriptive order of starting with that headline, having a visual element either next to it or below it. And then from there, we go to element 4, element 5. Again, these are not hard and fast rules. And once you know what you're doing, you can mess with these things. But when you're starting out as a framework, this is a good, solid place to start from. So this third element, which is visual elements, I'm thinking of something like a video, short video, less than 90 seconds for sure, or an image. And if you go to the webpage of hittail.com, you'll see an image that describes what Hittail does just with a couple of circles and some arrows. So it's almost like a video. It doesn't move, but it has enough text and some arrows that it shows you what it does in that image. And I think that's important. I think just having an image of a random person sitting there, clip art, staring at a screen, I don't think it's helpful because it doesn't actually talk about your value proposition or talk about your benefits or demonstrate something. I think this visual element needs to serve a purpose. Okay, so either an image that actually serves a purpose, a short video that gives some high-level benefits, or the third one that really is ideal but is a lot harder to pull off is an email capture form related to the functionality of your application. So I don't mean something that says, hey, here's some education about this topic of how to find more affiliates or of how to be an email marketer or of SEO, but it actually starts to demo the functionality of your app. So an example of this is if you go to the bidsketch.com homepage, and you'll see that Ruben has a form there where you enter your email, and it doesn't send you up for a course. It doesn't send you education. It actually creates a proposal. It emails you a proposal, basically demoing the functionality of the app. And so although he will send follow-up emails after that, that first one you get is essentially your first foray into seeing how the app actually works. And I think if you're able to pull that off in a way that's pretty elegant and actually shows people how your app's working, I think that's a big win as well.
Yeah, if you look at the BidSketch website, right there on that homepage, it says, get a sneak peek at a sample proposal. So that kind of meets the element too that you said with a gripping headline where it follows that simple formula for promise, action, and then talking about you, and then has that email capture form, which says, send it to me, which gives you that sample proposal. So you get a couple of different things there, and those two elements are combined. And Ruben's been doing this for a long time, so he has been able to effectively put those things together. And it may take you a couple of times to do this sort of thing. But again, the goal of this episode is kind of lay these things out and talk about the different elements and how they can be added to the page and in which order they should be added in order to give you a starting point. Once you've done this and you start testing it and checking with your customers to see how well it's converting, then you can start playing around with these things. But this is just the framework that we're following through.
And the fourth element is to provide a couple of benefits, not too many. Typically use the rule of three here, where I would veer on the side of having 3, 6, or 9. Probably the fewer the better. It kind of depends. If you go to planscope.io, you'll see that right down below his visual element, which is a video, Brennan has 3 benefits. Win more estimates, one sentence describing what that means, deliver better projects, and grow your business. It's a really nice example of boom, having 3 left to right, 3 benefits of what you're going to get using PlanScope. If you go to hittail.com, you'll actually see it's 3 sets of 3, and each set is aimed at a specific market segment that is using Hittail essentially. It gets value. It's SEOs, it's internet marketers, and it's e-commerce folks. And those are kind of the 3 core areas that use Hittail. So both of them work. I think the thing that I would recommend is when you're providing benefits like this, stay grounded. The biggest mistake I see with benefits is that people go so high level that it doesn't even make sense anymore. Like it's so vague that any app could do it. So I really don't like benefits like saves you time, makes you more money, because doesn't every app do one of those two things? I mean, really, that's the point today, right? Is that every business application needs to do that. So I think you, if you find yourself saying that, like, come down one or two steps to be a little more specific. And again, like Brandon says on PlanScope, win more estimates. If you went up a step, you could say, make more money, right? But that isn't helpful. It's like, you got to drop it down one level or two. Deliver better projects, grow your business. I mean, these are things that there's some tangibility to them. And if you're having trouble thinking of these benefits, what I would tend to do is to, if you make a list of benefits and a lot of them seem like features, like actual features you have built into the app, then read that feature and say, all right, we built XYZ feature so that. So that is the key phrase there, and you complete that sentence. So we have built, you know, this keyword suggestion tool so that you will get more keywords that you can then get more traffic from, blah, blah, blah. And that's your benefit after that so that period of the sentence.
When you're describing these benefits, if you whether you're going with 3, 6, or 9, it doesn't really matter. I mean, the headlines, I think, are going to be a little bit on the generic side because they tend to only be several 3 to 5 words in for the title of that benefit. I mean, if you have them separated out into 3, 6, or 9 sections, the words there are going to be relatively tight. But then in underneath it, when you start talking about what the details of that benefit, you can be very specific about it. So for example, on planscope.io, Brennan says, win more estimates. And then underneath it, he says, our collaborative estimating features help PlanScope customers close 2 to 3 times more clients. And that piece right there, closing 2 to 3 times more clients, is helpful in a couple of different ways. One, it tells you exactly what the benefit is, and two, it's very specific. And the fact that it's able to close 2 to 3 times more client projects means more money for you. And that is in a way implied, but it is also led from the win more estimates headline. So keep those sorts of things in mind when you're putting together those benefits. Another thing that you can do is you can take those benefits and separate them out onto different pages and talk more specifically about those. A lot of times when people are building a website for a new SaaS product, it can be difficult to figure out what information needs to go on the different pages. So make it simple. Just start out by outlining the different benefits and don't talk too much about them. And then later on, as you start to grow the site and you expand the footprint of the website, then you can talk about those benefits individually on their own pages. And then you can link to them from your homepage someplace. But I don't think that you need to do that from day one. And you don't want to overwhelm somebody on your homepage with every single piece of information you possibly have. I mean, because that becomes a long form sales page. And I don't think that that's what you want to start out with. You want to start out by educating them about your product. And then if they start drilling into your website and are interested in those other features, and you can talk more about them, and you'll be able to get more information about them according to your bounce rates and how long people are staying on the different pages by looking at the analytics behind those pages as people are visiting them.
Yeah, I'd also like to point out, I just noticed on PlanScope's homepage, their headline is gain total control of your agency, and that fits right into the kind of the three elements I said before of making a promise, having an action, and having you or your in the headline. Element 5 of highly effective SaaS landing pages is social proof. This one's very common and very necessary. I do not think this is optional. Social proof can come in many forms, and I actually believe that having all three of them is ideal. The first and most common one people think of are testimonials from customers. I always recommend you have headshots with those as well, if possible. So you have a headshot of a person, the name, link to their website, right? You don't want anonymous testimonials or just a first name or something. And then edit their testimonial down to just the core part. And so if it can be 10 words or 15 words, you're doing really well. And pretty much the best SaaS landing pages I see have testimonials. The next piece are to have press logos, right? Wherever you've been mentioned, whether online or offline press, if people are going to recognize that logo, have that in there. And the third one is to put a vanity metric in there. So if your app has analyzed 1 billion keywords, if you've sent out $100 million of proposals or your clients have through your app, if you're a web host and there were 9 billion page views through your network last month, I mean, these are very much vanity metrics, right? They are not business driven, and they don't help your bottom line, but they are kind of, they're basically bragging rights to show you that other people are using it and that you held up under this stress and that you have experience in this field. And all of this ties in to basically socially proving that your app is something that someone should consider.
Yeah, part of the social proof is just all these things that you talked about, the testimonials and the press logos. Those are essentially trust factors, and people want to be able to trust your app, but you need to give them a reason to. You need to give them proof of some kind. So the fact that you were mentioned on MSN.com or CNN or wherever, those are trust factors. The same with testimonials, especially if you start including headshots of the people who said the things about you. Those are also considered trust factors. When you start talking about the things that Rob just mentioned in terms of like the vanity metrics and the number of keywords processed, the amount of money that is embedded in the proposals that are sent out, or the page views last month, those are also trust factors, but they are internally related. So there's the two types. There's the external ones that you don't necessarily have control over, and then there's the internal ones, which you do. I mean, you could obviously fudge those numbers, but when somebody's looking at that website, they're not going to sit there and think, oh, this person's pulling my chain. And as long as the other things match up, they're just going to believe those numbers. No, they don't have to be accurate. They can be incremented on a daily or monthly basis or what have you, but there has to be some semblance of trust there for them to take those numbers and internally process them and believe them. And the same thing goes for those external logos. I mean, if it's something that they're going to recognize, definitely use it. And it's essentially you're piggybacking on the trust of that other website. So as I said, the logos of other major news outlets or anything like that, you're piggybacking on their credibility to essentially enhance your own.
Yeah. And just to clarify, you said the vanity metric doesn't necessarily need to be accurate, that you can update it once a month or whatever. I'd agree with that. I think as long as you're low rather than high, you're erring on the side of caution, right? It doesn't need to be an exact thing pulling from your database as a live feed.
Yeah, exactly. That's more what I meant than anything else. I mean, it doesn't need to be up to the second. That's right. Really what it comes down to.
Right. All right. So our sixth element of effective landing pages. This one's an optional one. It's features. It's having features on your homepage. So not benefits. And this is further down the page. Remember, we're kind of going in order from top to bottom. I have seen this done really well with some very specific features that set you apart. And in fact, if you couch it like that and you specifically say, you know, no other app has this feature, or these are the features our customers like most, or something like that, and just give a few of them. You're not giving a whole rundown of everything, but you're trying to call it out and show why you're different. You have to be very specific at some point during this journey. And if you feel like you can do it by putting some features on the homepage, and then folks can click through at the bottom of the homepage and get to like a tour or a features page with more specific mechanics of your app, I think is not a bad idea. I think if you're not sure, probably don't do this step, but I have seen it done really well. The reason that I like when people start getting into features, definitely on the website somewhere you need a features page. Because if you're just talking about benefits all the time, no one knows what your app actually does, right? If you go to a website for like an IBM software product or some Salesforce product, they each own bazillions of products, it seems like, all you tend to find is benefits with a lot of marketing speak, and it's really hard to just get a list of what does this app do. And it's hard for folks to figure out what you do if you never get down into features. So you definitely need a features page somewhere, and I think having a few that call you out on your homepage is not a bad thing. Our seventh element is to look at your top nav and to have four items or fewer in that top navigation. And that includes your home link. So you really only have room for a couple more. So I would typically have something like home on the left, and then either a tour or how it works, which is kind of the same thing, right? It's explaining the basic flow of your app. Sometimes it depends on if you want to include a bunch of features on that page, probably another discussion. But sometimes a tour is just, if your flow is fairly complicated and you're trying to teach people what your app does, then you'd have like a separate features page. And that could also be in the top nav. And then you could basically have a pricing page. I've also seen it done well to have another page that basically says why app name. So, you know, if you're Basecamp, it says why Basecamp, or why should you choose Basecamp? That's if you have a ton of press mentions, social proof, or just so much more to say. In fact, with Hittail, we have a why page in our top nav. And the reason is there were so many press mentions because the previous owner was actually a PR firm. There were mentions like on TechCrunch and in multiple newspapers and offline magazines, just all kinds of stuff. So there were so many quotes I found that I didn't want to stuff them on the homepage, didn't want to stuff them all in the tour, although I sprinkled them all over the place. There was just, we really needed a dedicated page to, it's just another way to build credibility and that someone can click to and think through, and it offers social proof.
these elements in the top navigation are probably going to get hit a lot more than anything else. I mean, we're going to talk a little bit more about the elements at the bottom of the page, but at the top navigation, those are the things that people see right at the top of the page, and they are far more likely to get the user to click through to those than anything that you'll find in the footer. And I've used this strategy before where I've embedded links in the footer purely for SEO purposes to get Google to essentially spider other pages on the site. But the reality is that if you start looking at the analytics for that, the users who are coming to your website virtually never follow through and click through a lot of those links. So you want to make sure that the pages on your site that you want to get the most traffic to for people who are hitting your site, and you want them to learn more about your product or what it is that you're going to do for them, make sure that those links are in that top navigation.
Our eighth element is to have an exit path at the bottom of every page. In essence, this is a button that takes someone to the next step of your flow. You want to think of this as a specific journey that you are leading someone through. So when they hit your homepage, you don't want a bunch of extraneous links. You want a few options at the top. If you even have a top nav, which is probably another discussion. I've seen folks run experiments that have worked where you basically remove the top nav and someone really only has one flow to go. You can scroll down and read. And at the bottom, there's kind of a tour button that leads you to the tour, and you're basically leading them through a flow. But in this case, having an exit path at the bottom of every page is something I think you have to have, and I think a lot of people don't do this. It's to think, boy, after they read this homepage, they get to the bottom, so maybe they've read the social proof and the benefits and maybe a feature or two. What is next? Like, what do they really want to know? And then take them maybe through a tour, and then perhaps take them either to features, or you start letting them know, hey, you can sign up for a trial. There's some options to think through. You really want to have one main and then maybe a secondary call to action down at the bottom there. But not having this exit path at the bottom then makes your reader get to the bottom and look around, probably click on something in your footer or scroll all the way back up to the top of the page, and you've lost them, right? You've lost control of their journey because now they're just wandering around clicking random stuff. And that's not an ideal scenario if you want to lead them through a path of education.
Yeah, if you take a look at, I'll use Hittail's webpage for example. If you go in right on the main page, at the top navigation, you've got home, tour, plans, and then why Hittail. And you already explained why you have the why Hittail there. But embedded in the text in the middle of the page, it says increase your traffic with the big orange button or take a tour. Well, that's the second link in your navigation. So if somebody does click that, they go to that tour page. And then at the bottom of that, there's essentially this call to action, which says your free trial awaits, grow your traffic. And if you click on that, that goes to the third thing in this top navigation, which is essentially the plans and trying to get somebody to sign up for a trial. So there are definitely times where the call to action at the bottom of your pages is essentially going to mirror what they would see at the top navigation, but that's not always the case. There may very well be an extended set of tour pages, for example, or additional educational content that you're going to put in front of them to help essentially walk them through the process of getting to the point where you've educated them enough such that they are going to sign up for your product or at least sign up for an email course or something along those lines to be able to bring them back. And it kind of depends on where it is in the sales funnel that those people are likely to be. The one thing that I have seen a lot of, and this is especially prevalent in a lot of WordPress themes, is that they have this scroll to top of page widget that will pop up. That's not something that you want to put in there. I mean, if you can disable that, go ahead and disable it. Because the fact of the matter is, if you have a long enough page that it needs something like that, they've already scrolled through the page. They don't need another thing at the bottom popping up to say, hey, would you like to scroll all the way up to the top to see all the stuff that you just scrolled past? No, I mean, they clearly know how to use a scroll bar. So if you can get rid of those things, get rid of them.
Element number nine is something I already covered when I was talking about eight, but it's to basically limit the number of links and buttons that you have on the page. It's essentially limit the number of decisions that folks need to make as they're reading through it. Be opinionated about where your visitor should go. Think through this flow. It takes time. Think through the journey, but it will absolutely increase the number of folks who get the proper education that you're trying to give them. And our 10th and final element is to put everything else within reason into your footer. And so I typically will see footers on homepages say something like about, contact, terms of service, blog, affiliates, etc. And I think that's perfectly fine. You know, I think having 6, 7, 8 links down there is fine. And something we've done with Drip, because we have API docs and we have like a press kit, and I didn't want to link out to all of those. We just have a docs link at the bottom and it links to kind of a nested page. So you can obviously start nesting things at some point. But I'm not a big believer in having 20 links down here, but I do think that having your basic, the basic pages that you're going to have in a marketing site and basically linking to all of them from the footer when you're starting is the way to go. I would not put an email signup form down here. I see people doing that and no one's ever going to submit that. If you really want folks to sign up for your course or whatever, I would not put it in the footer. And frankly, I probably wouldn't put it in the header either, because that's really your educational call to action of trying to get someone to learn more and click through to a trial. I would tend to use a little JavaScript widget like something you get from Drip or SumoMe or OptinMonster instead of trying to plug this thing down in the footer. And that'll give you control to have it kind of pop up at certain times or not, and just a lot better control of when to make it visible and when not to.
Something else that's helpful to put down the footer is some sort of a sitemap so that it's easier for the search engines to spider your website and get to all of the different pages that are going to be embedded in your site. And I think if you rely too much on dynamic HTML that essentially is put there through JavaScript or anything like that to display based on who is visiting your pages, it can be a little bit difficult to have the search engines spider your website. I mean, you could also submit a sitemap to like Google, but again, having a sitemap there that is human readable, and I don't mean by human readable XML, I mean a link that just goes to a sitemap where it lists all the different pages and all the different sections on your site. As your website expands and starts filling more pages, that becomes more important because sometimes people can get lost in your website. You may know exactly where everything is, but again, your website isn't for you. It's for the people who don't know anything about you and want to learn.
Yeah, I haven't been building sitemaps recently when we, you know, as we build new sites. Definitely we do this, the XML sitemap that search engines use, and they're pretty good at crawling anyways, but it's always nice to help them out. And the human readable one, I need to look. We still have one for Hittail because one existed when I acquired it, you know, and we update it and stuff. It's been kind of a pain as we add new pages to have to add them there too. I'd need to look to see how many people actually use it because I genuinely don't know how many visitors that page gets in a given month. I'd be curious to see if those are still used. I know it's something that we did 10 or 15 years ago when you designed a site, but it's not something that I typically put in sites these days.
Yeah, I find that there's a lot of sites that I go to that if they are large enough, there's so much content there that you don't necessarily know where you last saw something, for example. And the sitemaps can really help out with that. But it depends a lot on how mature the product is. I don't think that upfront you need a sitemap, but I think that longer term, as your product gets bigger and bigger, you probably do.
So to recap, our 10 elements of highly effective SaaS landing pages are: number one, to design for first-time visitors; number two, to write a gripping headline; number three, to have a visual element; number four, to provide three benefits, or to think it in the rule of three; number five, to provide social proof; number six, it's an optional one, to provide features on the homepage; number seven, to have four or fewer items in the top navigation; number eight, have an exit path at the bottom of every page; number nine, limit the number of links and buttons; and number 10, put everything else within reason in your footer.
Well, that wraps us up. If you have a question for us, you can call it into our voicemail number at 1-888-801-9690, or you can email it to us at questions@startupsforthestofus.com. Our theme music is an excerpt from We're Out of Control by Moot, used under Creative Commons. You can subscribe to us on iTunes by searching for Startups and visit startupsforthestofus.com for a full transcript of each episode. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.